During mental prayer, hope attains new intensity as it remembers the Lord's promises. In the aridity of prayer, hope becomes more fervent. When the Lord allows himself to be glimpsed, hope hastens toward him in leaps and bounds. This hope will not leave us disappointed. RM 5:5-73. Prayer must be a fast before it becomes a feast. Patience and impatience are two of the many virtues that mental prayer requires. I use the word impatience advisedly. Granted, it is not included in the official catalogue of the virtues. And yet, isn't impatience the daughter of love? How could the lover bear separation from the beloved, and not burn with the impatient desire to rejoin, possess and be united with the beloved? But you certainly don't need any invitation to impatience. You are well acquainted with it. On the other hand, it seems that you are less accustomed to the practice of patience. I would like to discuss patience with you, because it is absolutely necessary for anyone who wants to attain great heights in the practice of mental prayer. You've been in the seminary scarcely 6 months, and already you are disheartened not to have reached the summits of prayer. I beg of you, be patient, or, if you prefer, be patiently impatient. It is a good thing to eagerly desire union with God. But the road is long, and the path is steep. One must set out with a calm step, and the regular breathing of the man who wants to reach great heights. Patience, patience, my dear Francis, and don't forget what the etymology of the word can teach us. It comes from the Latin pati, to suffer, to endure. If you are resolved to endure, to hold out, to confront the desert and the night, then be confident. But you must reaffirm your resolve often. It will be threatened many times, especially at the hour of mental prayer. Certain spiritual authors of an earlier time, speaking of the trials of prayer, used a very strong expression. They said that we must suffer God. In other words, we must consent to the implacable, ingenious and persevering work of the Holy Spirit within us. Very gradually, he causes the old man to die, so that the new man can come forth freed from his dross, like glistening metal coming out of the furnace. You must have a courageous patience, like that of Jacob wrestling with the angel through the long night. Although injured, he refused to let go. That is why, at dawn, he obtained the blessing of his terrifying adversary C.F. Gn 32:25-30. A distant memory comes to mind as I write you, an old monk's invitation to patience addressed to a novice. It is in Miguel Mafiara, The Mystery of the Great Polish Poet Molosts. Before bidding you adieu, I shall copy a few lines from this book for your reflection. Love and haste do not get along well, Manara. Love is measured by patience. A smooth, even step, that is the air of love, whether it is sauntering between two jasmine hedges with a young girl on its arm, or walking alone between two rows of tombstones. Patience. An overpassionate hunger is also a temptation. Weeds and roots must be pulverized by bovine jaws in a beautiful meadow during the long, long hours of summer. For prayer must be a fast before it becomes a feast. It must be nakedness of heart before becoming a heavenly cloak rustling with the sounds of the world. A day may come when God will allow you to enter abruptly like an axe into the flesh of the tree, to fall dizzily like a stone into the darkness of the water, and to slip with a song into the heart of metal, like fire. 74. The giver or the gifts. Francis, thank the Lord who is helping you to pray. The desire for mental prayer, the attention to God that comes so easily during prayer, and the joyous fervor that wells up in you like a living spring, are precious graces. You see, God himself often chooses to teach his children how to pray. In order to make them decide to set out on the path of mental prayer, he comes to their rescue in a manner perceptible to the senses. It is important to realize that after a while, he will withdraw his graces of initiation. This is so that the soul, once weaned, will go forward in pure faith. The day will come, and perhaps soon, when you will be required to believe in dryness and darkness, what you are now experiencing in fervor and light. Prepare yourself for this new phase. As I read your letters, I sometimes fear that you are clinging more to the gifts than to the giver. What matters is to be pleasing to God, not to delight in His graces. This is as true of the sensible graces received during mental prayer, as it is of all God's gifts. If they are not used as paths to intimacy with God, they will become enslaving idols. This language is probably too abstract for a high school girl. An illustration taken from a movie may make my thought clearer to you. A very poor young peasant couple are living in a cottage. On the wife's birthday, the husband goes to the neighboring town with his meager savings. It's crazy to spend this money, but when one is in love, he brings back a precious package, and quickly hands it to his wife. She is delighted to find a pair of stockings. This is something wonderful for her because, being a poor peasant woman, she has never worn any. She admires them, and can't stop turning them over and over, caressing them tenderly. She does not notice that her husband is sad, and turns away as if he were intruding. He comes back, and finds her still completely engrossed with the stockings. Finally, he can't stand it anymore and shows his vexation. The young woman understands at once. She grabs some scissors, and cuts the stockings to pieces. She recoils from anything that can turn her eyes away from her beloved, even for an instant. And she rushes into her husband's arms. Francis, may the Lord's gifts be an invitation to rush into His arms, and not a temptation to delight in them for their own sake. 75. Is it for nothing? Are you familiar with the very strange story at the beginning of the book of Job? One day, when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "Whence do you come?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming the earth and patrolling it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you noticed my servant Job, and that there is no one on earth like him, blameless and upright, fearing God and avoiding evil?" But Satan answered the Lord and said, "Is it for nothing that Job is God-fearing? Have you not surrounded him and his family and all that he has with your protection? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his livestock are spread over the land. But now put forth your hand and touch anything that he has, and surely he will blaspheme you to your face." JBI:6LI. "Is it for nothing that he loves you?" Satan sneers. "Does he cherish you, or does he cherish the gifts that he has received from your hands in such abundance?" It is a perfidious and gross insinuation. Is Job's love for God nothing but a vile self-love, cleverly camouflaged? Job is put to the test, and he proves that his love for God is indeed authentic. A sentence in your last letter alerted me. "I can't fight off a certain sadness at having lost this intimacy with Christ in my mental prayer. It helped me so much these last few years amid the family difficulties, as you know so well. As I read this, I wondered whether you are sufficiently vigilant in ferreting out whatever self-concern there may be in your mental prayer. God forbid that I should discourage your desire for intimacy with Christ. I am thoroughly convinced that it is a grace. But is this desire sufficiently stripped of self-seeking? Is it for nothing that you love Christ?" Since that wonderful retreat of 1949, God has often granted you a keen sense of His presence and His love. This was to encourage you in the life of mental prayer. Have you perhaps come to take it for granted? Have you perhaps allowed yourself, without realizing it, to practice mental prayer more for the delight of the Lord's presence, than simply for His glory? At any rate, this is a question I invite you to ask yourself. When God grants us sensible graces, it is very difficult to keep a subtle self-love from mingling in with our love for Him. It is hard to keep a selfish desire to possess him from insinuating itself into our will to glorify him. That is why a purification is necessary. This probably explains the spiritual dryness you are experiencing at this time. Place your trust in the grace at work within you, but do not fail to cooperate with it. This is what I would advise you to do. From the start of your mental prayer, affirm to God that you have come to it because it is His will. In order to please Him, place yourself completely and unconditionally at His service. Accept in advance to receive no sensible grace, and even ask Him not to grant you any, if that can contribute to the coming of His kingdom. I know that we are instinctively reluctant to talk like this to the Lord. However, prayer of this sort has a miraculously purifying effect on the heart. Prayerful souls would be purified much more quickly, if they surrendered themselves in this way into the hands of God. He is eager to prune His vine, so that it may bear more abundant and more succulent fruit. If these souls grow discouraged, or clamor like spoiled children for new sensible graces, how can they expect to make any spiritual progress? Set out on this path courageously. I say courageously not as a manner of speaking, but because that is the right word to use. This phase of purification is a tough one. It takes great valor to persevere in it, to accept the apparent death of the feelings, the intellect, and the heart. But that's what it's all about. Our sensibility, by dint of being weaned from all gratification, seems to die. Our intellect, deprived of all life, paralyzed in its meditation, also seems to die. Our heart becomes insensible and, as it were, incapable of loving. We can understand why a spiritual writer of earlier times spoke of the sacrifice of mental prayer. Great faith is also needed if we are not to be led to think that this time of mental prayer is wasted. We must be convinced that this death prepares a resurrection, that unless the grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. John 12:24. Mental prayer, with the trials it holds for us, is really the crucible in which our love for God is purified, and attains sparkling radiance. 76. Like parched land. PS 143:6. My dear Father, why do you ask me whether, during mental prayer, we can surrender without scruples to our desire for union with God? Isn't the answer to be found in our breviary? For the breviary makes us put on the desire for God which burned in the psalmist's heart, and found expression in such poignant accents. My soul thirsts for you like parched land, PS 143:6. O God, you are my God whom I seek, for you my flesh pines and my soul thirsts like the earth, parched, lifeless and without water. Thus have I gazed toward you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. PS 63:2-3. As the hind longs for the running waters, so my soul longs for you, O God. Athirst is my soul for God, the living God. When shall I go and behold the face of God? PS 42:2-3. Theology also answers your question. It is the law, I was going to say the biological law, of the theological virtues, implanted by baptism deep in man's heart, to strain with all their dynamism toward their object, God. Faith aspires to an ever more perfect knowledge of the Lord, and charity yearns for an ever closer union of love with Him. And so grace, when it takes possession of man, fills him with ravenous hunger and unquenchable thirst. The more grace grows within the soul, the more intense the hunger and thirst become. And yet, I can't help thinking that you know these answers from Scripture and theology as well as I do. So you must be expecting something else from me. Am I mistaken in assuming that you are divided? That you wonder whether you should yield to the desire for God that inhabits you, or whether it isn't more perfect to yearn only for His glory? Everyone who is progressing in the paths of prayer must face this choice sometime.